Mr. Rogers, Real Six. You were talking about how they beat Stern first, and you were saying how they sort of anchored you, basically, using a spike. Can you carry on?
Yeah, well, they ran the spike into the ground, into the, you know, like the beach, and with the heaving line, you used to pull that in, so you pulled in a thicker rope to put round it, and you had to watch the tide. Wherever the way the tide was going, you pulled it on the opposite side, so the front of the barge would not swing round and go broadside to the beach, because that'd be no good for unloading. Then we mastered that, going all round different beaches, and the finest beach that we ever come across, we didn't know then, but we do later on, was a place on the Isle of Wight called Hampton Beach. It was like a silver sand. And when we beached there, the water being sucked in with a pump to go round the engine, they had to go through a filter. But being the sand was so fine, it kept on clogging up. So they decided to put one in front of that with a smaller filter. So we had two filters to go for the water to go round without clogging. Because all of a sudden you get someone shout out, "Your overboard's steaming," because that means the engine was getting too hot, because the water wasn't being circulated. And we carried on beaching until we got it off perfect. We could beach within 6 foot of each other, in near dead line. That's how good the coxswains was giving us orders down in the engine room, head on one, stern on another, and whatever way you wanted to go, backwards. And
Was your job? Tell me a bit more about your job on the. You were a stoker.
Just a stoker, yes. Stoker.
What was your job on the engine?
To drive the engine. See.
Was there anyone else on the engine, or was it just you?
Just me, because it was only like a big car engine, shaped exactly the same as a big car engine. The only difference was where the gearbox was. They only had two gears, forward and the stern. It was two rings for a head, three rings for a stern, one ring standby, that put it in the neutral, and when it kept that ringing, that means switch off. When it kept pulling this thing and it chimed, only on each individual one had their own bell. See, so although I could hear, I was on the port engine, and my mate Ronnie Skates, the other stoker, I could hear his bell going, but you got to the point that you knew that you had to ignore that. So let's just listen for your own one.
So there were two stokers, one on each engine.
Yeah.
What other crew would you have? You had the coxswain.
There was the coxswain, was a petty officer, a leading seaman, able seaman. And they were made up.
What did the seamen do? The leading seamen and the able seamen.
Well, they done everything. See, the AB, that's the able seaman, the leading seaman, I should say. He would give the coxswain a break on the helm, on the steering wheel, you like to call it, because this wheel box that was on. As I say, it was only 4 foot high and about 3 foot square inside. And at the back of him was the pole to take the white ensign. See, so that they had no glass or anything in front of him to stop the wind or any cover over them at all. So when we was on manoeuvres, pouring the rain or snowing, the stokers, like me and Ronnie Skates, was the best off, because we not only was we warm, but we was in the dry. The coxswain, the AB, and the leading seaman, they finished up getting...
So there were five of you in the crew?
In the crew originally. And just before, fortnight before D-Day, we, yeah, it must be fortnight, 3 weeks anyway, two new crew members come. One was an ordinary seaman, and the other one was a second class stoker.
And what were they to do?
We had to teach them, the second class stoker, how to handle the engines, because it was so straightforward.
And they'd take over to give you a break?
To give us a break when we wanted to smoke, like, you know. But he could only take over one engine, so he couldn't work the two of them, see? So it gave us, so who's ever, when they smoke, the other one kept his eye on the second class stoker to see that, and listen to his bell as well as his own bell, see? And see that he done it right.
Now, how seaworthy, because you were going quite away, if you were going from Yarmouth right round to round Cornwall, you were going a fair way.
No, it wasn't in one trip. No, we'd go along and say, be going, say, about 5 or 6 hours, and we'd beach, see, to have something to eat. See, that's when we could go and cook.
It didn't damage it when you beached it?
Oh, no.
Not after you'd got the rudder protected?
Yeah, see, well, if not, we... there was 12 barges in the flotilla, and we had two dinghies. And if we couldn't beach, or it didn't look too good to beach, we just dropped the anchor and lay off the beach. And because if we wanted to go to the shore, we used to use a dinghy.
And how seaworthy were the barges? You know, because, well, even if you were 5 hours, I mean, you could get some choppy water.
Oh, we had two tanks, two on the port side, two on the starboard side. They held 250 gallons of petrol each. And up forward, right in the corner of being protected, was a big tank. I suppose it must have held, 50, 60 gallons of fresh water. Because in the summer, our flotilla officer used to come along in the dinghy, and you had to line up on the ramp to save water. You used to have to dive in, swim round, get back on.
But that doesn't really answer the question of how seaworthy they were.
Yeah, and... they were very, very good, because we didn't know what we were going to do. We thought everything was a manoeuvre, and we were just going to go to help the ships, you know, to load them and unload them. We didn't know that we were going to be used to go over on D-Day.
But I'm still trying... I'm surprised that barges were seaworthy in out in the open sea.
Oh yes, because I mean, when we went for refit, see, the hole where they used to drop all the stuff in, you know, when they were barges, they put a big steel bar, what they called an RSJ, from forward to aft. Then they give us thick 4-inch by, 12 inches, 15 inches wide to put on top to lay on.
Decking.
For decking, see? Then we had to cover them with tarpaulins. And we had big steel bars we used to drop into sockets and then wedge wood in it and bang them on so that anything that come on would not go in the hole.
Any waves? Yeah.
No waves, see. But we still only had roughly 18 inches to walk round. Then they come out with the idea of welding bars along the side and wire holes are going round so as a guide. So that you couldn't slip over the side, really. And while we were there, one of the petty officers come out with the idea of making a clamp that would fit round the slow but sure combustion stove, and you could put it your cooking utensils inside that and clamped it so that the swale of the engine or the sea wouldn't, make it fall off. Because we more or less, when we was at sea, we more or less lived on stew. Everything was stew. Because we had ration cards that we could go to any shop and get our victuals, as they were called. See? And because what we used to and go and get steak, leg of lamb or anything like that, because we had priority with these ration cards. Well, when you got five and you got that, and you could be surprised how, and you got that every week, and you got paid £1.15 the first fortnight, the second fortnight you got £2, and that's how you was paid all the time.
What was that?
That was our whittling money. See, so actually we lived better off than anybody.
Now, where were you actually based? You were based in the harbour. Well, where would you live? Or would you live on board ship?
We used to live on board when we got the bunks put in. And sometimes they might decide to have the bilges pumped out, so we just picked up our gear and went and stayed in the Savoy or the Norton camp.
Now, could you explain about the Savoy and Norton camps? What were they?
They were chalets, like a holiday, I think it was Buckley's holiday camp, originally.
And that was, they were right next to Yarmouth Harbour.
Well, I'd say about 10, the nearest one was the Norton camp, would be about 10 minutes walk. The Savoy would be about 15 minutes walk. In fact, the army had this camp, and they turned it down and said it was unsuitable for anybody to live in. But we took over. How I know this, my Uncle Bill, who was in the artillery, was on the big forts in the Solent, and that's where he was in those Savoy and Norton camp.
How did you get on with the local people in Yarmouth?
Very, very good.
Well,
see, don't forget, the Isle of Wight was a vegetable island.
What do you mean by that?
Well, they grew all potatoes, cabbages, everything. See, so if we wanted any, potatoes, a few, half a pound of butter, you'd be fiddling, but not fiddling, if you understand what I mean. It's something that you do to make the mills better.
And the local civilians were helpful?
Yes, very helpful. Especially the Weekshe public house in Yarmouth, they were always helpful when we went in there. if we went in there one fortnight and we towards the end of the fortnight and we hadn't been paid, we could go in there, and they knew, and if you walked in, they said, just put their thumb up and say, come and have it on the slate. And you know, not one person bumped them. Well, not in our flotilla anyway.
Now, what was your flotilla called? Did it have a name?
Just, no, they had numbers. LBV, mine was LBV. I was one barge, but it was in two sections. What I mean by two sections, when it was first formed, it was the third flotilla, and I was on a barge, LBV 183. Then when they cut the flotilla in half in two sixes, I was with us one half that was known as the 19th flotilla, and our barge number was 121. And it was a training flotilla, but it was training all the new lots that was coming in to handle these landing craft.
So first you were LBV 183, third yeah. flotilla, and then LBV 121, ninth flotilla.
Yeah.
Why had you been sent to the training flotilla?
Well, see, they had the coxswains and the lightermen, that'd be the like the originally the able seamen, that after 6 months they were made leading seamen. The others were all chaps that's got just been called up for the Navy. And we had to teach them what their job was to be done. See, we had stokers and we had seamen. And to give you an example, it's a funny story, but it's a true one. Our anchor, we always called it a killick, because that's what a leading seaman wears on his arm, is an anchor. See, so we always called the anchor a killick. And one day the coxswain shouted out to me, get one of them to fling the killick over the side. So I called one chap, I said, go up and throw the killick over the side. He looked at me, but I said, don't butt, I said, get and fling the killick over the side. He still hadn't moved, and Gus Murrell, the coxswain, turned around and said, if you don't effing well move, he said, I'll come down and move you. So with that, he runs up the front and pushes the leading seaman over the side. And that is God's truth. He came out the leading seaman. He was in a temper. I mean, he must have been in his 30s, see? And he was just, I'll kill him. Because when we told him, it looked like as if someone had hit him on the head with a crowbar. He just sat down on a bollard and he roared his head off. And when he, you know, we see he was laughing, we said it was him. He walked over to him and we thought, oh, he's going to throw him over the side. He went over and he said, all right, son, he said, it's not your fault. But that is a true story.
Any other stories that sort of let us know what life was like then? In the training bit, any other funny stories or?
Well, in the summer we used to sling our hammocks in the hole when they, you know, when they weren't being used. And because in the summer then, not like the summers we're getting now, you sling in that, and if it started raining, all you done is get hold of a sheet and pull it right over the top of you. But if you ever read this book and read it, you'll find how lovable we got towards these barges.
You really liked them?
We really all really loved them. And I mean, though they used to take the mic out of us, we've had we've only just got the engines put into it and got used to them, and we had two leading seamen come, both had over 15 years service in the Navy, and we took them out to Alien Island was one of our places, but was Owen Bay, and they were sick all the way there and sick all the way back. And they said they'd never been seasick before.
But you weren't seasick in a...
Only once.
When was that?
Well, I made a pig of myself. In those days, I used to love pickled onions. And I ate a small jar of pickled onions. And we had to go to sea. And it was rough in the Solent. Because that's when the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth used to come through the Needles up to Spithead. They used to come in that way. And if they passed us, we used to dip our white ensign, because we had no horn or anything like that. And they used to toot, they used to pull their hooter to acknowledge us, like, you know. And when we got into the swell of it, that's, and what they've eaten these pickled onions called, did not know it. But that was the only time I was ever seasick while I was in the Navy. And I'll put it down to the pickled onions anyway.
Now, what about anything else? As the time for D-Day grew closer, did you know what was happening? I mean,
no, we didn't know nothing whatsoever until we started seeing a lot of big ships coming in and what's called it tying up for different anchors, you know, anchor bays and that. And of course, they were sky high to us. They're like bloody skyscrapers to us and down below. And because we used to get all the miggy taken out of us, you know. And then from there, we had to go back to Southampton. We went to Southampton to get loaded up with, let's call it, stores. Then we found out that we had to carry jerry cans of petrol. And because at the time, we didn't know what a jerry can was. We had 500 on board, which is 500 gallon. It is 500 jerry cans, and each jerry can holding 4.5 gallons of petrol. So
you'd never practiced with that before.
No, never.
Had you had practice loads before, or was that just dead work?
Well, loading. They used to like big concrete box.
But not
things.
Not real things. Just
not real
weights.
Things, you know. They were put there to see how they handled.
Now, what did you think when you knew you were taking in petrol? Because obviously it's risky.
To be honest, and even to this day, I can't remember thinking anything other than that's what was being we were being loaded on. Onto our landing craft.
Didn't bother you?
I don't know. Actually, don't forget, we got two 250-gallon tanks just in front of our engines. And they only had a 4-inch bulletproof armour plating round it. See, so
quarter of an inch, you mean, not 4-inch?
Pardon?
Quarter of an inch, you mean, not 4-inch.
No, 4 inches. It was a steel plate in there with like a asbestos in between, then steel like that in there, see?
Right, yeah.
See, so that was round it. And I think that's why it didn't worry us, because we knew. Well, one particular day, I'm going ahead of myself.
Yeah, so you loaded up with petrol. When would that be?
That would be on the, I would say, round about the 1st of July.
June?
June, I should say. 1st of June.
1944. So what happened next? Did you stay at Southampton, or did you go back to Yarmouth?
No, when we loaded, we were, had to go round, and we tied up this side of the Needles. That's in between Yarmouth, otherwise, and the Needles. I suppose if you was to take a direct line, it'd be where fresh water would be. So
it tied up to what? Tied on shore?
No, tied up to a big boy. See, there used to be three of us tied up to the boy. And each one had went back, they had done three to a boy. Then
now, you were with the train, you were still with 19th, so it was no longer a training flotilla.
No, no, it was the 19th flotilla.
You'd trained it now.
Yeah, we trained them all, see. Because there was 480 of these landing craft, see, so we were training them men for those landing craft.
So
but our flotilla was the original 19th flotilla men, see, so we were well trained. See?
So what happened next? You were tied up?
We was tied up there. Then there was a lot of activity of boats going, the outboard motors going, like, and tugs and that. Then they took the officers off our landing crafts and come back. They said, start up the engines.
Officers? I thought you had just a coxswain.
No, not the coxswain, just officers.
So you had an officer on board as well?
No, not on our barge, but on one of the other barges. You know, there
Sorry.
Was three officers in the flotilla.
Sorry, see? Right.
So they took the officers ashore, and what's called it? That was the senior one was Osborne, Skipper Osborne. Second in command was Sub-Lieutenant or Lieutenant Clark, nicknamed Nobby Clark, and third in line was Sub-Lieutenant Willis. They all took them ashore. They'd been gone for about 2 hours and came back, and they come along, dropped the Skipper Osborne on the leading, the first landing craft, and they took the other dinghy, and one officer went to one half of the flotilla, and Willis went to the second half of the flotilla, and we was told to start engines, let them tick over. Then we got orders at 5:45 on the 5th of June at night. That's 17:45 hours to, what's called it, let go.
Cast it off.
And made our way following the leader. We had two tugs circling us round, and we had to follow them. And every now and again we got an MTB come belting past us, which were a pig of a things they are, to not make us swell when they go. And it, well, I can't use the word, what one of the officers on one of the MTBs said. Starts with a C and ends with a T, he said. Those silly...
But you wouldn't hear him, would you, on your boat?
No, but no, I was. It's in this.
Oh, yeah. Just what you remember is me.
Yeah.
You know.
And when it got dark, because I never had a watch. Because if you had a watch in those days, your people had money. The coxswain had a watch, and I think the leading seaman had a watch, but I never had one. I know the other Sturker never had one. And it was pitch black. And I just got relieved to have a Jimmy Riddle over the side and a smoke. And I was standing having a smoke, and I don't know, it was the leading seaman or the second class stoker got washed over the side. Because I see him go, and I went in after him, grabbing hold of a lump of what we call hanging line for safety, and I happened to grab hold of him because I had a duffel coat on, sea boots, trousers, overalls,